Hi, my name's Courtney Thorpe, and welcome to More Than Just a Mum. My crew very quickly disappeared. I found it really hard to bond.
Don't go to the gym, just have a sleep.
Welcome to More Than Just a Mum. I received so many messages since recording episode one of this. So many people just being so supportive and sending their love. And honestly, I have been blown away. So thank you so much for tuning in and thank you for supporting me through this. But what I really wanted to do today was to take some of the questions that I've gotten mostly on Instagram and just have a bit of a chat so that I can answer your questions and you can get to know me a little bit more at the same time. So let's get straight into it. Lauren asked me how to get through a marriage breakdown. To be honest, I'm still going through it, so I'm not at the end yet. I don't have the complete answer, but I know some things that I've learned along the way that I think have definitely helped me to this point. One of the best pieces of advice that I got was to make healthy choices. You know, you can't control the other person and their actions and what they're doing, but you can 100% control yourself. Even though sometimes you feel like you're totally out of control, and trust me, I had those moments. I had a lot of those moments where I'd find myself just in tears, or I'd just be so angry at something that he said and it triggered me and I just felt like I lost control for a minute. That's normal. But I felt like I kept that make healthy choices at the front of my mind. So for me, I made a conscious choice that it was no alcohol. It's a depressant. Just stay away from it. You're going through enough. You have so many emotions as it is. Just let them be and experience them. You don't need any outside help to make them harder to deal with. It's a grieving process and there are the stages to grieve. So go through them and experience them completely. Don't try to push them away. Don't try to rush through them. Don't try to put a mask on them. Just experience it with your full self. The other thing as well that really helped me to get through it was making a decision right from the get-go that I wasn't going to hate him. Now, don't get me wrong, at times I really hate him, but I'm trying really hard always to change my perspective on that. And yeah, I might hate him for a couple of hours or even a few days, but I try my best to then let my emotions calm down. Even if I can't see things his way, maybe it might be reminding myself that he has gone through a marriage breakup too. And I don't know, that just makes me feel a little bit better. It may not for you, you might just want to be angry at him, but for me, it just kind of having that empathy makes things feel a little less hostile, remembering that it is still another person going through this. Then you can kind of rise above things a little bit. And that's what I feel like I have to keep doing. There's so much I have to keep rising above. And if I can almost have some empathy for him, it just makes that a little bit easier. And I suppose the other thing is to look after yourself. For me, up until that point, looking after myself was not only the bottom of the list, it wasn't even on the list. And whether that is having a nice long bath, or whether that's getting a babysitter in, or sit down and write a list, the things that you miss, or the things that you've always wanted to do, or both, and commit to it. Commit to yourself. I think that's really important. The next question is from Jerry, and she said, what I wish I knew before becoming a mum. Oh my God, everything. I don't even know where to start. I mean, I really, really wish that someone had told me that you're not just going to give birth to a baby, you're going to give birth to a whole new version of yourself. I think that I never expected to lose myself to the level that I did. There's so much pressure put on us to be these perfect mums and the way you have to be a perfect mum. And, you know, it's you should breastfeed, the debate about immunizations, how you put your baby to sleep, where they sleep. There's so many things. And I wish I'd known that, you know what, the best piece of advice that you could get is if mum is happy, baby will be happy. The baby doesn't know if it's got an option between bottle or breast. The baby doesn't know whether it can sleep in your room or not in your room. The baby has no clue, but the baby does know if you're happy or if you're not. So I wish I knew that, and I wish I put that into practice. Zara said, what did I do to lose weight? Well, Zara, my husband cheated on me. There's your answer. I did absolutely nothing to lose weight. Honestly, it was going through an incredibly traumatic event where I just could not eat. I couldn't physically eat that I dropped a fair bit of weight. Definitely not the healthiest way. And I do not encourage anyone to go through that. And I do not wish anyone to go through that. But I think the thing is for me, like we said in episode 2, when I spoke with the lovely Liz Cantor and she had her journey of losing weight and mine's a very obvious journey of the opposite, I just wasn't in the space to get up and go to the gym. I had no energy. And I think it was a mix of postpartum depression, being a mum to a newborn, being a mum to two other, or stepmom to two other children. I was just exhausted. The last thing that I wanted was to even get up and go for a walk. So for me, the only way to get through at the time was to just put one foot in front of the other. And that meant that losing weight wasn't an active part of my day, which is ironic given that you all have heard how much I struggled in myself because of my weight, but I just really didn't have the energy to do anything about it. And you know what? That's okay. Tori asked, how did I go from being so career focused before Kennedy to then becoming a mum? Well, to be honest, for me, I feel like I became a mum when I met Lara and Peyton. I know I spoke about this in episode 1, but again, not taking away from their mum, but with what I was expected to do for Lara and Peyton and what I stepped up to do for Lara and Peyton, which I was more than happy to do, I loved it, really was a mum role. So for me, my motherhood journey, as far as I'm concerned, actually started when I met them. And it was really hard. I had this amazing career. It was just taking off, had so many opportunities. For the first little while, it was this total juxtaposition of coming home and Peyton was still two. So coming home and wiping bumps, coming home and changing sheets from when someone had wet the bed, coming home and putting knit treatments through their hair and my hair and, God, the bloody dog's hair sometimes because our house was full of knits. The thing that made it really hard was, like I said, how quickly I had to adapt to that. And then at the same time, feeling like I was a mum but not really being one was also very difficult. That was a really hard thing to wrap my head around because it didn't matter what I did. I was at school meetings. I was at, you know, the parent-teacher interviews. I was at daycare events, school events, doctor's appointments. But then at the end of the day, you're still not a mum. So it was this really weird pull of being involved with them but not having any rights, not having any real say. And that's pretty much the expectation until it's not, you know, until push comes to shove sometimes and the next thing it's they're not your children. So that was really weird. It was a really weird time to try and figure out my role. But I just sort of was led by the girls for most of that and just what needed to be done for them, that was what I did. And then when Kennedy came along, that was the first time that I'd been a mum to a newborn, which was a whole new experience. And that was rough, which we know, you know, me with my weight and postpartum. And then I was also a mum of three, essentially. I tried to hold on to my career a little bit after she was born, but it faded away really, really quickly because I just couldn't. There was no way I could find a way. And I think that for me was when I started trying to convince myself that I wanted to be a stay-at-home mum. And funnily enough, my whole life, that's actually what I always secretly wanted because my mum was so career-driven and I had these visions of being the mum that stayed at home in my soccer car. And I, you know, would the kids would come in and I would have had these beautiful baked goods ready for afternoon tea. And I'd be wearing my apron and humming songs with the birds outside. Like it was just this magical world that I had imagined in my head. And then when push came to shove and that was the role I was forced into, I hated it. I am not built to be a stay-at-home mum. And my God, after doing it for a few years, my hats go off to stay-at-home mums because it is truly the hardest job in the world. I remember, especially more so in the early days, sitting back and watching the jobs I knew I was up for and that I was meant to be at, or even the events that I know I'd usually get invited to that I wasn't being invited to, and being really angry. I didn't even know who I was angry at, but I was just angry. I was probably angry at myself. I was probably resentful of Jared. I was resentful to the people that started to take over what these jobs were that I would usually be doing. And it was really hard to sort of sit back and go, no, you've chosen this. No one's forced you into it. You still have chosen it. And I think that's important to say as well, is that at the end of the day, I really could have stood up and said, no, this isn't for me. This isn't what I want to do. But obviously I did want to do that. I did want to be there for Lara and Peyton. I suppose in hindsight, I wish that I'd been able to create more of a balance, but I, like I said, I hadn't worked out how to do that. For me, it was sort of all or nothing. So I did definitely feel really jealous, which is always embarrassing to admit, but I felt really jealous when I saw people getting the roles that I knew normally that would have been my job. That was hard to swallow. Georgia asked for me to share more about my postpartum depression journey. It's a really hard one for me to talk about because I genuinely, and I had a question about this too, asking how I didn't know that I had postpartum depression. I went to so many doctors and I told so many of them how I was feeling, and it was, I feel really sad. I feel absolutely exhausted. I feel like I have no motivation. I feel angry. I feel all these negative emotions, and all of them just kept dismissing it, saying, well, you're a new mum. You're tired. It's normal. Don't worry about it. Don't stress about it. How old's bub? Oh no, just wait till she's this age. Things will get better. You're fine. You're fine. So that was sort of what I believed, was just that I was tired. That's literally how I got through 2.5 years of postpartum depression, was believing that I was tired. I was more than just tired. I was really not okay. And like I said in episode one, the problem with me, and I know so many women and so many mothers, we put on the brave face because we're so worried about everybody else and they come first. So we do put on this brave face and we don't feel like we can be vulnerable. I felt it was a weakness that if I actually had this, I was weak. I was failing. I'm not that person. I would never tell my mum. So she didn't know. I was in a really dark, dark place. I feel like I look back at that period in my life and it's just this dark cloud over it. It actually didn't come out until I decided that I needed to go and see a psychologist. And I remember my first meeting with Monique, and she said, well, let's start with you. Talk me through what's been happening. And it was when I went through everything that she sat there and looked at me and said, have you been diagnosed with postpartum depression? And I said, no, I mean, I've spoken about it, but everyone said I'm tired. And she said, I really think you need to go and make an appointment with your GP and go and tell them everything you've just told me. And it was this weird relief that finally there was an answer for why I'd been feeling the way I'd been feeling. That was when the GP put me on medication for depression and anti-anxiety. And I found that really difficult to comprehend that. But it got me myself back. Oh, I wasn't going to cry in this episode. I swear I'm really not that emotional usually. But for the first time, I can look back on the last 6 months and not see black in my mind. And that feels amazing. I feel like I came back, finally back, and that feels really good. Alex asked what my top 5 mum hacks are. My first one is my sleep system. And if you followed me on Instagram since Kennedy was born, you will know what I'm talking about. I swore by this. And if you're a new mum, or a mum that's going to be, or you've got friends becoming a mum, tell them this, because, oh, it just makes life so easy. So what it is you get the sleeping bags that are TOG rated. Very important that they're TOG rated. So I always used Ergo Pouch. And what happens is they come and they have this TOG rating, and they can be, I think, 0.5, 1.0, 2, 3. And they also send you a little guidance. And it shows you that if the temperature is this in the baby's room, then you need to dress them in this. Sometimes it might just be just a nappy or a singlet and a nappy or a onesie. And then what TOG sleep bag to dress them in. I used that and then also used a grow egg, which is from Tommy Tippy. And it's an egg that you plug into the baby's room and it comes up with the temperature and it also shines a color. So if it's a safe temperature, it'll be, I think, green. If it's quite hot, it'll be more red. But I never really cared about the colors. I just used the temperature that came up with it so that I knew I could look at my pamphlet from Ergo Pouch, and I went to the section that corresponded with the temperature, and underneath that it would tell me exactly how to dress my baby for the climate. And it was so amazing because I watched so many of my friends struggle. They never knew whether baby was hot, baby was cold, baby was this, baby was that. And of course SIDS comes into it. You know, we're all told if baby gets too hot that SIDS is a risk. So I always freaked out about that. And this just took all the stress out of it completely. Number one, mum hack right there. Number two, so I remember when I had just met Lara and Peyton and we took them out to a restaurant and Jared was going to bring their iPads and I went, oh, never. That is so inappropriate. It is so important for children to sit here and be a part of conversation so that they know how to interact. No, they do not need it. They need to learn how to behave and rah, rah, rah. And I was the biggest judge. I'm not that person anymore at all. So my number two tip is don't be anti-technology. Don't be that person. It's too hard to fight it. My tip is just use it in a way that helps you feel less guilty. So for me, that is having educational games. I download some shows on Netflix or Disney or whatever app you've got. Look, doesn't matter if you don't either. It just makes me feel a little bit better. But at the end of the day, it means that I get 2 seconds of adult conversation. It means I can breathe. I can actually walk through the shops without someone trying to climb out of their pram in the middle of a tantrum that's embarrassing me like God knows what. I can actually live my life for 2 seconds. So I'm all for it. Use the technology. We can't keep kids from it these days anyway. The world is so full of it. We may as well embrace it. And you know what? Raise the next Steve Jobs. Just embrace them. You never know what they could end up creating. Number three is, and this is one of my big money savers. Actually, here's a fun fact about me. I'm a massive stinge. I don't like spending money. I really, really hate it. In fact, I think I'm looking around my house at the moment and I'm sitting in this sitting area, which is where I do my podcasts from. And I'm looking at everything in this room and everything is either IKEA or Kmart or I just don't like spending money. I will go cheap always if I can. So this one is to buy your kids' clothes a year ahead during your sales. Things are so dirt cheap, especially at Kmart, which that's where Kennedy gets most of her clothes from. Nothing wrong with that. They've got amazing stuff now. But I just bought swimmers at the end of their summer sale and they were originally like $18 and I picked them up for $2. It's so well worth it. It's crazy the stuff you can get. She has a jacket this winter that I got for $5 and it's a full, you know, proper winter cozy one with the fur around the hood. It's in there at the moment for $30, the exact same jacket. So it is well worth, if you can manage it, save up and buy your clothes a year in advance and just pack them away. Katie has asked, actually a lot of people also asked, what my relationship with Lara and Peyton is like. This one's another really hard one to talk about. As I have, I think, made very clear that I took a lot on with those girls. I didn't just take on the acts of doing. I also took on the act of loving them. And again, yes, the love you have for your stepchildren is different from the love you have for your own child. 100%. I'm not going to pretend anything different. It is a totally different love, but it is still a huge love. It was even little things, you know, Lara and I had been reading Harry Potter. We read together a lot of nights, not every night, but a lot of nights we would read Harry Potter together. And now we don't get to finish that together. You know, I decorated their rooms just for them in my house. And now I walk into those rooms and I've had to change them. One of them's a toy room for Kennedy and one of them's a guest room. And every time I walk into those rooms, there's still this massive feeling of them missing from my life. And I've, at the moment, lost two little girls that I saw as my own daughters. But I keep looking at the brighter side, and my bright side is that, and I used to tell them this in the early days of the separation, no matter what happens, they will always be my family because they're my daughter's sisters. And they will, and I mean that. And even though it's hard at the moment and I may not see them at the moment, there's a lot of life left to live that I'm going to be here for whenever they need me. So much for not crying this episode. This is the second time. Frankie has asked what the best and worst parts of getting divorced are. Well, the best is definitely finding myself again, without a doubt. And again, I didn't know how unhappy I was until I was out of it. And I think hindsight is such a gift. But I think that's the weirdest part about it being the best part is I strangely thank Jared for ending the marriage, because I would never have done it. I'm just not that girl. I was here till death do us part when I probably shouldn't have been. So I weirdly really thank him for the fact that he did end this marriage, because I think it was the best thing that could have happened to me, which is really strange. And the worst part is losing your best friend. And I think that's really important to say, because as much as it may sound, you know, like at the moment there's so much hate and there's been so much yuck that's gone on, for most of our marriage, it was so wonderful. And when I say I wasn't happy, that a lot of that didn't even have to do with Jared. It just had to do with, I don't think it was the right life for me. I don't think I was, like I said, built to be a stay-at-home mum. And I hated the football world. I've made that perfectly clear. So I just don't think I fit in the life that he needs someone to fit in. And I was miserable. But for most of our time, he truly was my very best friend, and I adored him. He was the first person that I would go to with any happy news, any sad news, the person that I wanted the opinion of and valued the most and did everything with. And I think that, God, keep it together, Courtney. I think I'm actually more sad about losing him as my best friend than I am as my husband. Yeah. But who knows? Like I said, life is long. And maybe one day when all the yucky legal stuff is over and all the hurt is past us, we might find a way to be friends again. I wasn't being the person that I am or that I wanted to be. So I needed to pull back. I needed to ask mum to step in. And it has been so good, because there's no fights. Kennedy's not seeing mum cry. She's not here at the moment, so she hasn't seen me sob my way through this episode. She sees mum happy, and she sees mum getting herself back and doing what's right for me. And she sees her dad when we've arranged a time, and she gets to spend that time with him as well without knowing that there's just been an argument. And I think that's really important, because at the end of the day, adult stuff aside, it's about the kids. And I think it's just really important for her to have that meaningful relationship with both of us. And that is all the questions I have today. Thank you so much for asking. And again, thank you for taking such an interest in this journey of mine. Make sure you keep tuning in. We have some more amazing guests coming up in the next few episodes of More Than Just a Mum.